Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Ashley.
Nice to see you. My name is Ashley Bryant, and I'm 54 years old. Today is June 15th, and I am speaking with our National Director of Social Programming, Caitlin DiCicco, who is just a fabulous colleague of mine. And I'm interviewing this in Sacramento, California.
And my name is Caitlin DiCicco. I'm 30 years old. It is June 15th, 2021. I'm speaking with Ashley Bryant, who is the CEO and co-founder of Three Strands Global Foundation, which is the agency that hosts and the Employ Plus Empower program. And I'm recording from Concord, California.
So we thought it would be a great idea in this recording to just explain what Three Strands Global Foundation does and our work. And then we will get into some questions for each other so that we can know historically how this work came to be. So Three Strands Global Foundation has been combating human trafficking for the last 12 years. Actually, we're in our 12th year. And our focus has always been prevention. It's been prevention through education and prevention through employment. And our employment program, which Caitlin just talked about, is Employ Plus Empower. And our vision is a world free from human trafficking. We have a large staff that works across the United States. And today we're going to be talking about specifically the Employ Plus Empower program. So I'm going to ask Caitlin some questions. Caitlin, can you tell me a little bit about the Employ Plus Empower program at Three Strands Global Foundation?
Yes. So the Employ Plus Empower program is an intensive case management services program and an employment program. So we work directly with survivors of human trafficking and individuals who are at risk of exploitation. And that includes transitional age foster youth, formerly incarcerated individuals, survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, and more. And we provide case management to break down any barriers they experience to that prevents them from getting employment or pursuing career goals. And we also try to make sure that their basic needs are met. So we work to make sure they have housing, childcare, transportation, food, interview and work clothing, any technology that they might need for a job or for education. And then meanwhile, we build up their employment skills. We train them in different areas of resume building, interview skills. We teach them how to apply for school and register for classes. And then we place them into jobs and education programs. And we stay with them for a period of time until we know that they're going to be successful and self-sufficient. And our approach to this is economic insecurity is one of the greatest reasons that a person is exploited. And so we want to eradicate the root of this root problem of this economic insecurity and try to get all of the people that we work with connected to employment or their career goals so that they can have a sustainable income and that will reduce the risks of someone coming and targeting them and exploiting them.
It's such a great way to explain it, and it's so comprehensive. And you know, I was just thinking for our listeners whenever they listen to this that maybe I should define human trafficking too, because that might be helpful to be able to explain what is human trafficking that we're combating, because some people will know. But so when we talk about human trafficking, it's really an umbrella term for two focuses in the United States. It encompasses a few more that I'll talk about, but really in the US, we focus on forced labor. So someone who's forced to work without wages or not equal pay, or someone who may be trapped in a job situation. And then there is commercial sexual exploitation, which often is referred to as sex trafficking. So if you think of this umbrella, both of those, labor trafficking and sex trafficking, fall under the term of human trafficking. And then there are three words that are really important that help us to know, is this a crime of human trafficking, and for anyone in the world to know. And that is that, is this a crime that includes force or fraud or coercion? And each of those words are important because fraud and coercion are a little bit harder when we try and define them. Force is easier, but really most cases of human trafficking don't actually involve force. They involve fraud or coercion before they involve force. So this is not a take and grab crime. This is someone that someone has known and potentially has groomed, which means spent time to get to know that person to exploit them the way that Caitlin talked about. So hopefully that gives context. The only other components that are tracked globally from the International Labor Organization our forced marriage is also a piece of this, as well as organ trafficking as well. So those are the other components. So Caitlin, tell me about your happiest memory working with clients.
It's hard to pick just one, but I would say kind of like overall, my happiest moments working with clients is when I see that shift in their thought process about themselves. And when they go from like not having hope, not seeing themselves as a positive person, not seeing the skills that they have to offer. And then all of a sudden there'll be like a shift one day and you'll hear them say something just like, I can't wait to do that job, or, ooh, that's the perfect job for me. Or they're just say like, I'm proud of myself. Mm-hmm. And those are words that you would otherwise have not heard them say as they entered the program. And so when I think along these lines of like, those are my favorite moments of when I see them just start believing in themselves, just genuinely seeing themselves as a person of worth and value. It's indescribable. It's like, it's breathtaking to watch it happen. Cause it's something very subtle, but very beautiful in that change. Mm-hmm. And so one of the main moments that I remember is we had a survivor we were working with. She had been exploited since a very young age. Her father was a trafficker. Her mother was in the life, and she had never had a job before. And she, when we changed the program, she kind of came into the program like, I don't really know why I'm in this program. I'm not going to get a job and I don't really care to get a job, but I'm going to do it because my other caseworkers want me to do it. And fast forward to about 8 months down the road, she had finished her first couple weeks of work. So there had been a lot of those subtle shifts that I just talked about. Mm-hmm. And we sat at a coffee shop together and she pulled out of her purse her first paycheck. And she was like, look at this. And she just handed it to me. She didn't tell me what it was. And so I looked at it and I was like, what is this? She's like, open it. And I open it up and I notice it's a paycheck. And I was like, this is a paycheck. And she's like, it's my first paycheck. Wow. And she cried because she was so proud of herself. She didn't say I'm proud of myself, but she just, I knew that that's what she was feeling in that moment. And I was incredibly proud of her. And then, so we're having this moment. She asked me to take a picture of her with the paycheck because she said, anytime I'm feeling tempted to go back to the life or that the exploitation starts kind of pulling me back in, I want to look at this picture and remember how I feel in this moment. And I was like, what an incredible and like incredibly insightful thing to like recognize that that's going to help you in your tough, like very difficult moments. And so we took the picture and then fast forward. So like, there's one of my like glimpses of like, it was just so proud. And like that moment will stick with me forever. But then fast forward a couple months later, we were having our Break Free Run, which is our annual run to mobilize the community and raise awareness about human trafficking. And we invited her to be a guest of honor at the race. And we just asked her to show up and we just told her we were so proud of her and we just wanted her to be there to experience it and see how many people in the community were coming together to fight human trafficking. And when she got there, she asked to go on stage and she asked to sing. And she didn't even actually, she said, can I go on stage and can I have the microphone? And she sang. And she sang a song that she had written about her experience in the life. And the whole crowd, there was thousands of people in the crowd and everyone just got quiet. Like you could hear a pin drop and everyone could hear her singing. And at that point she'd been in the job for now over 6 months. She had stable housing. She was just glowing. And to hear her sing that song and see the transformation take place, that whole memory is going to stick with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I remember that so vividly. You're so right. I just remember. And even when you say it, I get chills again. Because it was thousands of people were so quiet to be able to hear. It was quite a moment. Thanks so much for sharing that. I can so see too that picture would stick with you. I can hear why, because it's really incredibly powerful. Now, you know, kind of one of the things you talked about, and I think this is important for people who listen to this, that exploitation and trafficking, people can, you know, it is something that we talk about at Three Strands Global Foundation is a trauma, but it also is something that people are connected to their trafficker oftentimes. And you had mentioned in this instance that she didn't want to go back into the life. And so I think it's important for the people who listen to this at some point to understand, why would someone do that? Like, you know, that's one of the questions I know you and I get is, I don't understand, why would they go back to being exploited? So I think we should probably, for our listeners, wherever they listen, that we should probably touch on what why that happens, just so briefly they understand it.
Absolutely. There are so many reasons that someone might go back, but I think the one that I see most often is the person who's trafficked them is often someone that they care deeply about and they have a relationship with. And despite the horrible things that the person is putting them through, there is a connection to them, whether it is a loved one, a family member, a significant other, there's a connection. And it's sometimes the people that we've served have been in this life for so long and connected to that person for so long that they don't really know anything other than that. Mm-hmm. And that comfort that they have in that person, there's a bond, it's called trauma bonding, and I won't get into it, but that trauma bonding just really plays a huge role. And then in addition to that, that's oftentimes that person is providing for them. They are providing a roof over their head. They are providing clothes and food on the table. And there's a lot of basic needs that are also being provided for. And so if you leave that situation, especially if you're someone who's never had a job because you've been in a life of exploitation, how scary is it? I don't know how to get a job. I've got no work experience. And then not believing yourself, no one's going to hire me. No one's going to want to, like, kind of they get in their mind of like, this is all I'm good enough for, and this is what I know how to do. And so it's really it's a difficult process, and it's a long process, but it's a process that we're willing to wait and go through with the people that we're serving, of like giving them helping them build up that confidence, helping make sure their needs are met so that they don't have to rely on that person who's exploiting them to get those needs met, and then helping them find different relationships that are healthy and stable. And so it's really challenging for someone to leave a life of exploitation. And it's often those same people in their lives will come back, and things will trigger them and kind of entice them back into that, because as strange and as horrible it is in our view, that's their normal and that's their comfort zone. And so we just have to understand that that's where they're coming from. So it's a very, very complicated thing.
Yeah, but you explained it so well, Caitlin. And I think that people who listen to this will really understand too, because it is complicated and complex, and it doesn't fit nicely into a box, right? There are lots of levels and layers to it. Yeah. So thinking about some of the difficult moments. I mean, I know that, you know, thinking about people going back to be exploited is obviously difficult. So share with me a memory, a difficult memory, something that is really difficult.
Yeah. And I think this memory will actually kind of speak a little bit too about why someone might go back into life. But I have a client who will forever be in my heart and someone I will think about often for the rest of my life. And I was working with her. She was still in the life when she entered our program, but she was really wanting to get out. And so we got her connected with a job, and she was working that job. And we knew that there was maybe some, she was still, her life was 50-50 at that point, but she was making steps to get out of the life and to live a life where she was employed like more full time, and she could get away from the person who was exploiting her. And we felt really good about where she was. She was showing up to her job. She was working almost 40 hours a week. She was showing up on time. She was getting her job done. Her bosses were contacting us saying, hey, she's a terrific worker. Like, she's amazing. And so we kind of thought the coast was clear, and we're like, she's doing great. Like, and we kind of started rolling back on services. And then something kind of shifted, and her bosses reached out to me and said, you know, can you contact her? I think something's off. So when I ended up contacting her, I found out that she was still with her trafficker. She was pregnant at this point. with the baby's father is the trafficker. She had lost her housing, so she was living in her car with her trafficker. He was still setting a quota for her, despite being pregnant, living in the car, and working. He was taking all of her paychecks from her, so she wasn't keeping any of them. And things were actually far worse than we realized. And I spent a lot of weeks and months trying to build up trust in her, because the person who was exploiting her was filling her head with ideas that I was not someone that was here to help her. I was here to get him in trouble. And so she was really reaching for services, but then pulling back a lot too, because she was afraid. And because she had the trafficker who was going to be the father of her baby, a person she had been in a relationship with for a long time, in her ear. And she ended up disclosing to me a lot of really violent and horrible things that he was doing to her during her pregnancy. That he was still having her go out onto the blade to make money for them. And how I couldn't help but think it was the heat of summer months in Sacramento, and she was living in her car and she was pregnant. She had nowhere to go. And I was working so hard. Like, I was doing everything I could, trying to find any resource I could, just trying to be a consistent, steady person in her life, just to help her, like, get through this really difficult time. And something happened, and I can't remember what it was, but it, whatever I did broke some trust with her. And I think it was her trafficker telling her, like, she's not a trustworthy person, and she pulled back really, really badly. And so I ended up losing contact with her. And I think I heard from her once or twice after that. She kind of just stopped talking to me. She stopped answering my phone calls. She stopped showing up to her job. And I couldn't get in touch with her any other way. And so those are the hard memories, where you have someone who you care about in the life, you know about the horrible things that are happening to them, but they're connected to their exploiter, just like I described a little bit ago. And then when you lose touch with them, it's, you always are filled with a sense of, like, where are they? Are they okay? Where are they now? And that was about a year and a half ago. And I still think about her probably once a month. She'll pop into my head and I'll just wonder. And I've tried to contact her a couple times on the phone numbers I have, and I haven't heard back. And so those are the difficult ones, where it leaves you feeling hopeless, or, like, not hopeless, helpless. It leaves you feeling helpless, and you want so bad for the best for them. But I think it's having to come to terms with that, like, you're one person and you only have control over so much, and you can do the best you can to keep that person safe and make sure that they're okay. But sometimes it's just out of your hands, and that's hard to swallow sometimes.
Yeah. And that's such a really good point, that, you know, I think about the hundreds of clients that have gone through the Employ Plus Empower program, and the success, but the difficult ones really just take us to our knees, right? Like, whoosh, just, it's over, you know, it is really a knife to the heart. Even as you explain that, I just think, oh gosh. And I think it's really important to be authentic in that space, that this is, as we talked about just a minute ago, there are layers and layers, and there's trauma that an exploiter who sees this person day in, day out has the capacity to manipulate and to use for bad what you were trying to be able to have as truth for her to be able to see. And I think that mentally and emotionally and physically, when someone is, as you said before, so connected to someone who's exploiting them, it's hard. I can't imagine how hard it must be to be able to know what is true, what isn't true, right, in that state. Yeah. So thanks for sharing that. I just, yeah, that's, it is, it's just that the realness of this work, right? And how, you know, it can be a day, an up and down journey.
Yeah, it definitely can.
But keeping that perspective, like you talked about, that hope, knowing that sometimes you'll feel helpless, but that you're hopeful that, that the clients that you're working with are going to get to that space to be, stable.
Yeah. And we always make sure that every person, whether they leave our program unexpectedly or they graduate with success, we always let them know that our door is open. And if they're not ready right now, we always make sure they know you are always welcome to come back. We can always try this again when you are ready. And even if they graduate successfully and they're like, I'm good, I don't need you guys, we always make sure they know. If for any reason you think that we can help you with something in the future, please call us. And so that's my hope piece of like, and we've had survivors who go leave the program. They're like, no, I don't want to do the program. I'm not ready. Whatever the reason may be. And then we've had them contact us 6 months later, a year later, and hey, would it be okay if I try to start services again? And so I know that like, they won't always reach out, but that's the hope piece is like when they do, it's always very like, cause then they're, you know, that they've been thinking about it and it took a lot. It took a big step for them to reach back out and ask for help. And so we're here to when they're ready.
Yeah. No, and that's actually leads me right just beautifully back to my next question, which is, you know, thinking about the influence. I mean, I can see the influence that you've had on so many clients' lives and all of the staff in Employ Plus Empower, but share with us, you know, with me, who has influenced your life and what they've taught you. I would love to hear that.
I'm definitely going to have to say my mom has influenced my life in a huge way. She instilled in me throughout my life and to this day, the ideas of carrying yourself with integrity, being respectful, being ethical, and always trying to take extra time to find out where people are coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think that those core things are what make me as a, like, I'm a social worker by trade. And so that's what makes me as a social worker. And that's how I've built out this program is mm-hmm. I every single day want to make sure A, we're listening to our clients. We're understanding where they're coming from. We aren't jumping to conclusions or making assumptions, but we're just always trying to listen to their story so that we can know who they are as people and not just a number, not just a face, but they are genuine people with complex lives and stories. And there's that. There's treating people with respect, and that's treating our clients with respect. That's treating everyone that we come across each day and inside and outside of work, treating people with respect. And then the other things to me is like really carrying yourself with like integrity and being ethical. And those are really important values to me. And they're things that my mom, I remember her, she never like had a speech that she gave about them. It was always just through her actions that I witnessed. It was like the silent lessons where, and I don't even think I realized until I graduated college, those things that like, I didn't reflect on those probably actually until I was in grad school about like, oh, where did these values come from? And like, how did I learn them? And yeah, like I said, there's never a lesson where my mom was like, you must do this or you must always do this. It's always just how I watched my mom interact with the world and how I wanted to be like that and how I wanted to and how I admired that. Mm-hmm. And so that's so she's not only impacted me, but she's impacted the way that like I care about this program and how I carry it and how I treat every person I come across in my life.
Yeah. And that's 100% accurate about you. You do that in every way, Caitlin. And I witness that every single day as we work together. And it is genuinely an amazing quality of you and a quality that you've obviously witnessed and absorbed from watching your mom. And that's incredibly powerful. Being a mom of four kids, you know, I think our actions always speak louder than our words. I'm a big believer in that. And so they're always watching, even now, and you know, for you, as you watch your mom do things, and even for my oldest, I know they're always watching.
Yeah.
So that's really a great example. So thinking about what you are most grateful for and most proud of.
I'm most grateful for the opportunity that I've gotten through being like connected with Three Strands. Never in a million years did I, you know, I knew I was wanted to be a social worker and I want to work with people, but I just didn't really ever envision myself here. But when I think about the other options or pathways that I have or had or whatever was presented to me, I feel I just feel so grateful that I got the opportunity with Three Strands to just come and do this work. Anti-trafficking work meant and means a lot to me. And I often think about how grateful I am to be in this space. And then I think what I'm most proud of is I'm really, really proud of the growth that the program has experienced over the last about 3 years now. When I look back on, you know, we were just a teeny, teeny, I mean, we're still a small program, but we were a teeny, teeny, tiny little program. Yeah. And now I look at everything that we've built out. We've got employment pathways. We've got really robust services. We've got 2 social workers. We've got a workforce person. We're going into San Francisco. And when I reflect on the last couple of years, I just feel so proud of the program. And I know that that sounds probably really cheesy of like, oh, I'm so proud of my program, but like, it's not, I'm proud of the impact that we've had on people's lives. Mm-hmm. Don't take it lightly. And I feel when people ask what I do, like, I feel proud to say like, this is what I do and this is what our program does. And like, and so I think I'm just grateful for the opportunities that I've been given, because the program, like I became part of the program, but I was given the opportunities to like build it out. And I think like through, so I guess what I'm trying to get to, I'm weaving through this, I'm getting here. I'm grateful for the opportunities that you've given, Ashley, because you never say, no, that's not possible, we can't do that. You're always open to listening and to exploring and to problem solving and to being creative and to dreaming. And I'm grateful for that because that's not found everywhere. And I think the program I wouldn't be as proud of the program, and I don't think it would be where it is. And I don't think we would have had the impact on the lives that we've had the impacts on if it weren't for you believing and for you dreaming with me and for you being open to my crazy ideas and the things I want to try and to exploring and to brainstorming and like fostering that in me and fostering it in the people around and like creating this culture of like, we can do this and we can take this crime down and like, we can do it if we do it together. And so I'm grateful, I'm not only grateful for Three Strands, I'm not only proud of the program, but I think it comes from like the leadership and from just the comfort and the care that you put into each and every person at Three Strands and each and every client, even though you don't get to meet many of them, you care. I know you care about all of them. And it's felt. So I'm grateful for you.
Oh, thank you, Kate. That totally just like, I do say that and I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. I'm glad that you feel supported. I'm glad that you feel listen to. I'm glad that you feel inspired that you can share any crazy idea that you have and that I will always listen because that's really important to me that you feel that way. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
That was a good moment.
So it took me a second to get there, but I got there.
So you know what? I think it's what's so neat is that, you know, you talk about all of these clients and the good and the bad and the ugly, right? There's all of these, this journey and in the sense of that's life, right? The reality is that there is no perfect life. There is no picture that's perfect. And the journey is up and down. But to be there as a team together, to weather the goods and the bads, the ups and the downs, that's really what it's about.
Yeah.
And if we know that we're for each other and for ultimately our clients who we're serving, then it's going to be okay.
Yeah. You
know? And so I agree with you. So I'm thinking about future generations, right? We listen to this recording that we're doing. What is some of the wisdom you'd want to pass on to them? And what would you want them to know? Maybe whether it's human trafficking or it's about employee-based empower or Three Strands Global Foundation, what would that be as people in future generations listen to this?
So I think So I think this goes like just for life, but also for like working with survivors or whatever path life takes you on. My big takeaway that I want others to practice is like treating each other with kindness, mm-hmm. because so often, not only like just in life, but also like when working with survivors, how mistreated and misunderstood they have been in their lives and how people have jumped to conclusions about them and really just not treated them well, and how impactful that is on just their well-being and their belief in themselves. And it has a ripple effect in their lives. And so whether it's a stranger that you meet, or if you're in the social services field and you're working with survivors, wherever it is in life, like my big takeaway is like, just treat people with kindness and take a moment to like listen and try to understand the people that you come across in your life. Because we don't know the roads that have been traveled by people, the journeys that they've been on. And if we just take a little moment to like try to listen and understand where someone else is coming from, how big of an impact in a positive way that ripple effect can be, because someone will remember that. Like, it's planting the positive seeds. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this in our team all the time, is sometimes what we're doing, we don't know if it's working. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the hard thing about social services, is like, you think you're doing the best that you can. And what research shows is like, these things typically work, but like, because we're humans and we're dynamic, it may or may not work. And so we're always planting these seeds, and you don't know what seeds are going to blossom. And I think like an example that I have of that is, like I had a client who, she was in the program. I was working with her for 6, 8, 10 months maybe. And we just weren't getting anywhere, and kept trying and trying and trying, and just weren't getting anywhere. And then she just disengaged from the program. And about like a year and a half later, I got a phone call from her, and she just called to like to update me on where she was. And she was like, you know, Caitlin, like, she's like some of the things that you said really stuck with me. Like, I can hear you sometimes talking to me, like when I'm doing things, like I'll hear you be like, no, like you got to believe in yourself. And she's like, I can hear your voice in my head. And I'll be like, okay, all right, Caitlin. And I had no idea I had that impact on her, because we weren't making a lot of progress when she was in the program, and she didn't seem to like super engage in it. And so I had no idea I was planting those seeds. And so I think that's like my message in life, is like, you don't know the impact that you're having on others. And so even if you don't see an immediate result from it, and even if it's a moment passing where you're just treating someone with kindness, like, you don't know the positive seed that will plant and how it will grow. And so just being kind. That's my big takeaway of like what I want to pass on to others. My other two things that I've learned from being in this program, and that I want others to hopefully they'll learn throughout their lives, is focus on the small wins. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we got so focused on the big picture that we lose sight, and we get discouraged when we don't hit that big picture right away. Mm-hmm. And something that has helped me and my team and our clients time and time again is focusing on the small wins. Whether you just got out of bed and you got yourself dressed today, that is a small win. Or you got the job, that is a big win, but also could be a small win that's part of your big picture. Those little tiny, even the small win, like going back to my very first response, like when I hear a client say, I'm proud of myself, that might not be a big deal to a lot of people, but that's a big one for me. But I know that that's just a small stepping stone towards this big picture. And so focus on the small wins, because that will always help you get through. And don't give up. Yeah. Don't ever give up. And that's especially when working with survivors of human trafficking. Just don't give up on them. Yeah. And because you're going to come across really difficult times, there's going to be the goods and the bads. And then when things are bad, it's going to feel like, well, you're going to start feeling some of maybe that helplessness that I talked about earlier. But just be tenacious and don't give up, because when we in our program have not given up. When people have told us, just stop trying, just give up, we have refused to do that. And we have seen some of our survivors now, they're going to four-year universities, they've got full-time jobs, and they've got apartments that are in their name for the first time. And if we had given up, like, who would have been there? And so just don't give up.
Yeah, that's so true. And I can think of so many survivor leaders that have honored me with their story where they said someone didn't give up, right? That someone didn't give up even when things were really hard, and that they weren't being kind, or they weren't listening and wanted no part of what that person was trying to share, that they ultimately didn't give up on them. And I think that's so important for future generations and for each other, right? To not give up on each other. It goes back to what we were just talking about before, which is that team piece. It's so important to be team, right? To be able to say, I am for you. Even when you think you're not for yourself, or you think I'm against you, I'm not for you.
Yeah. Tell yourself. We don't have to do it alone. The team piece is, without a team, we would not be able to accomplish the things that we have been able to accomplish. And it takes, especially when working with survivors who are newly out of the life, it takes a team.
So when you think about the lessons that you've learned, you know, Employ Plus Empower and in building this program, and again, you know, others who will listen to this, what are, you know, just a few of those lessons, and specifically as, you know, building this program, that you would think back on that, okay, those were really important lessons?
So a couple I've already said is, like, focusing on the small wins, don't give up. Part of, like, I think, like, a sub to don't give up is there's always a solution. Mm-hmm. And there's times where I was like, well, we just got to pack our bags and call it in, because we've tried everything. So I think part of the there's always a solution is that team or that community piece. Mm-hmm. This has to be done in a community. And so whether it's reaching out to others in the community who are doing the same or not, if not similar work, or working with similar populations, like, reaching out and genuinely learning about, like, what everyone has to offer and how we can come together as a community to serve people who need the services. It's about coming together and collaborating. And that is probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned over the last 3 years, is collaboration is everything. So when you feel like there isn't that solution, and the times I've been like, well, we're going to call it because we can't find that solution, it has been me reaching out to others to say, this is the dilemma that we're in. What should we do? Or do you know where I can get this service? Or do you know who has an expertise in this type of whatever it may be? And that has always given us the solution. Or even not even like reaching out externally too. Sometimes it's just me going to, like, you, or it's going to someone else on the team outside of my day to day and saying, like, this is the challenges that we're coming across. And almost, I don't think I can think of a single time where that hasn't given me, or, like, led me or pointed me in the right direction of the solution I need. So collaboration and teamwork, and don't be afraid to reach out for help to others.
That's so important, Caitlin. I smile because, you know, as we present Employ Plus Empower to potential funders, and as we talk about the program, a lot of what we focus on are the 50 plus agencies that we work with in this space, because, to your point, without being able to have that collaboration, we don't serve our clients in the very best way. And so sometimes it's thinking of not only that collaboration, but how do we get to the solution together? Because we feel like we've hit a barrier. And so how do we get through to that other side? That's such a great point. All right, last question in our last minute. Hopes for the program. So just as we finish off, and I'll let you kind of say that, and then we'll sign off.
Hopes for the program. I just want to continue to reach as many people as we can possibly reach, whether that means going into new cities to make sure that people are getting services, or it means just making sure that we're serving more people in the communities that we're already in. I just want to continue to grow the program out so that no person has to go without services if they want to get access to our services. And so my hopes for the program is, I want to serve like 1,000 and then next, see where we've served 300. I want to see another 600 served with good quality services in the next like 5 years. And then we'll hit 1,000 served. And it's not about the number of served. It's just about making sure that because there are that many people out there that need to be served, but making sure that we're reaching the populations who need to be reached and that they're getting the quality services so that we can prevent exploitation or re-exploitation.
Boom. 1 minute, 1 second. That was great. All right. I'm going to stop the recording now. That was awesome, Caitlin. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. And thanks for just being who you are. I so appreciate you.
Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate you.
Okay. It says, yay!